Chapter 47. Directly they were alone, the colonel's severe official manner changed. He rose and approached the doctor. His eyes shone with rapacity and hope. He became confidential. He Silver might have been indeed put on board the lighter, but it was not conceivable that it should have been taken out to sea. The doctor, watching every word, nodded slightly, smoking with apparent relish the cigar which Sotillo had offered him as a sign of his friendly intentions. The doctor's manner of cold detachment from the rest of the Europeans led Sotillo on, till, from conjecture to conjecture, he arrived at hinting that in his opinion this was a put-up job on the part of Charles Gould, in order to get hold of that immense treasure all to himself. The doctor, observant and self-possessed, muttered, "He is very capable of that." Here Captain Mitchell exclaimed with amazement, amusement, and indignation, "You said that of Charles Gould." Disgust, and even some suspicion, crept into his tone, for to him too, as to other Europeans, there appeared to be something dubious about the doctor's personality. "What on earth made you say that to this watch-stealing scoundrel?" he asked. "What's the object of an infernal lie of that sort? That confounded pickpocket was quite capable of believing you." He snorted. For a time the doctor remained silent in the dark. "Yes, that is exactly what I did say," he uttered at last, in a tone which would have made it clear enough to a third party that the pause was not of a reluctant, but of a reflective character. Captain Mitchell thought that he had never heard anything so brazenly impudent in his life. "Well, well," he muttered to himself, but he had not the heart to voice his thoughts. They were swept away by others full of astonishment and regret. A heavy sense of discomfiture crushed him. The loss of the silver, the death of Nostromo, which was really quite a blow to his sensibilities, because he had become attached to his captors as people get attached to their inferiors from love of ease and almost unconscious gratitude. And when he thought of Deckard being drowned too, his sensibility was almost overcome by this miserable end. What a heavy blow for that poor young woman! Captain Mitchell did not belong to the species of crabbed old bachelors. On the contrary, he liked to see young men paying attentions to young women. It seemed to him a natural and proper thing. Proper especially. As to sailors, it was different. It was not their place to marry, he maintained, but it was on moral grounds as a matter of self-denial, for, he explained, life on board ship is not fit for a woman even at best, and if you leave her on shore, first of all it is not fair, and next she either suffers from it, or doesn't care a bit, which, in both cases, is bad. He couldn't have told what upset him most Charles Gould's immense material loss, the death of Nostromo, which was a heavy loss to himself, or the idea of that beautiful and accomplished young woman being plunged into mourning. "Yes," the doctor, who had been apparently reflecting, began again, "he believed me right enough. I thought he would have hugged me. Sigh, sigh, apostrophe," he said, "he will write to that partner of his, the rich Americano in San Francisco, that it is all lost. Why not? There is enough to share with many people." "But this is perfectly imbecile," cried Captain Mitchell. The doctor remarked that Sotillo was imbecile, and that his imbecility was ingenious enough to lead him completely astray. He had helped him only, but a little way. "I mentioned," the doctor said, "in a sort of casual way, that treasure is generally buried in the earth, rather than set afloat upon the sea." At this my Sotillo slapped his forehead. "Poor Dios, yes, apostrophe," he said. "They must have buried it on the shores of this harbor somewhere, before they sailed out." "Apostrophe, heavens and earth," muttered Captain Mitchell, "I should not have believed that anybody could be ass enough." He paused, then went on mournfully. "But what's the good of all this? It would have been a clever enough lie if the lighter had been still afloat. It would have kept that inconceivable idiot perhaps from sending out the steamer to cruise in the Gulf. That was the danger that worried me no end." Captain Mitchell sighed profoundly. I had an object, the doctor pronounced, slowly. Had you? Muttered Captain Mitchell. Well, that's lucky, or else I would have thought that you went on fooling him for the fun of the thing. And perhaps that was your object. Well, I must say I personally wouldn't condescend to that sort of thing. It is not to my taste. No, no. Blackening a friend's character is not my idea of fun, if it were to fool the greatest blackguard on earth. Had it not been for Captain Mitchell's depression, caused by the fatal news, his disgust of Dr. Monaghan would have taken a more outspoken shape. But he thought to himself that now it really did not matter what that man, whom he had never liked, would say and do. I wonder, he grumbled, why they have shut us up together, or why Satillo should have shut you up at all, since it seems to me, you have been fairly chummy up there. Yes, I wonder, said the doctor grimly. Captain Mitchell's heart was so heavy that he would have preferred for the time being a complete solitude to the best of company. But any company would have been preferable to the doctor's, at whom he had always looked askance as a sort of beachcomber of superior intelligence partly reclaimed from his abased state. That feeling led him to ask, what has that ruffian done with the other two? The chief engineer he would have let go in any case, said the doctor. He wouldn't like to have a quarrel with the railway upon his hands. Not just yet, at any rate. I don't think, Captain Mitchell, that you understand exactly what Satillo's position is. I don't see why I should bother my head about it, snarled Captain Mitchell. No, assented the doctor, with the same grim composure. Don't see why you should. It wouldn't help a single human being in the world, if you thought ever so hard upon any subject whatever. No, said Captain Mitchell, simply, and with evident depression. A man locked up in a confounded dark hole is not much use to anybody. As to old Viola, the doctor continued, as though he had not heard, Satillo released him for the same reason he is presently going to release you. Eh? What? Exclaimed Captain Mitchell, staring like an owl in the darkness. What is there in common between me and old Viola? More likely because the old chap has no watch and chain for the pickpocket to steal. And I tell you what, Dr. Monaghan, he went on with rising choler, he will find it more difficult than he thinks to get rid of me. He will burn his fingers over that job yet, I can tell you. To begin with, I won't go without my watch, and as to the rest we shall see. I dare say it is no great matter for you to be locked up. But Joe Mitchell is a different kind of man, sir. I don't mean to submit tamely to insult and robbery. I am a public character, sir. And then Captain Mitchell became aware that the bars of the opening had become visible, a black grating upon a square of gray. The coming of the day silenced Captain Mitchell, as if by the reflection that now in all the future days he would be deprived of the invaluable services of his captors. He leaned against the wall with his arms folded on his breast, and the doctor walked up and down the whole length of the place with his peculiar hobbling gait, as if slinking about on damaged feet. At the end furthest from the grating he would be lost altogether in the darkness. Only the slight limping shuffle could be heard. There was an air of moody detachment in that painful prowl kept up without a pause. When the door of the prison was suddenly flung open and his name shouted out, he showed no surprise. He swerved sharply in his walk and passed out at once, as though much depended upon his speed. But Captain Mitchell remained for some time with his shoulders against the wall, quite undecided in the bitterness of his spirit, whether it wouldn't be better to refuse to stir a limb in the way of protest. He had half a mind to get himself carried out, but after the officer at the door had shouted three or four times in tones of remonstrance and surprise, he condescended to walk out. Satillo's manner had changed. The colonel's offhand civility was slightly irresolute, as though he were in doubt if civility were the proper course in this case. He observed Captain Mitchell attentively before he spoke from the big armchair behind the table in a condescending voice. I have concluded not to detain you, Senior Mitchell. I am of a forgiving disposition. I make allowances. Let this be a lesson to you, however. The peculiar dawn of Sulaco, which seems to break far away to the westward, and creep back into the shade of the mountains, mingled with the reddish light of the candles. Captain Mitchell, in sign of contempt and indifference, let his eyes roam all over the room, and he gave a hard stare to the doctor, perched already on the casement of one of the windows, with his eyelids lowered, careless and thoughtful or perhaps ashamed. Satillo, ensconced in the vast armchair, remarked, I should have thought that the feelings of a caballero would have dictated to you an appropriate reply. He waited for it, but Captain Mitchell, remaining mute, more from extreme resentment than from reasoned intention, Satillo hesitated, glanced towards the doctor, who looked up and nodded, then went on with a slight effort, here, Senor Mitchell, is your watch. Learn how hasty and unjust has been your judgment of my patriotic soldiers. Lying back in his seat, he extended his arm over the table, and pushed the watch away slightly. Captain Mitchell walked up with undisguised eagerness, put it to his ear, then slipped it into his pocket coolly. Satillo seemed to overcome an immense reluctance. Again he looked aside at the doctor, who stared at him unwinkingly. But as Captain Mitchell was turning away, without as much as a nod or a glance, he hastened to say, You may go, and wait downstairs for the senior doctor, whom I am going to liberate to. You foreigners are insignificant, to my mind. He forced a slight, discordant laugh out of himself, while Captain Mitchell, for the first time, looked at him with some interest. The law shall take note later on of your transgressions, Satillo hurried on. Be but as for me, you can live free, unguarded, unobserved. Do you hear, Senior Mitchell? You may depart to your affairs. You are beneath my notice. My attention is claimed by matters of the very highest importance. Captain Mitchell was very nearly provoked to an answer. It displeased him to be liberated insultingly, but want of sleep, prolonged anxieties, a profound disappointment with the fatal ending of the silver-saving business weighed upon his spirits. It was as much as he could do to conceal his uneasiness, not about himself perhaps, but about things in general. It occurred to him distinctly that something under and was going on. As he went out, he ignored the doctor pointedly. A brute, said Satillo, as the door shut. Dr. Monaghan slipped off the windowsill and, thrusting his hands into the pockets of the long, gray dust coat he was wearing, made a few steps into the room. Satillo got up too and, putting himself in the way, examined him from head to foot. So your countrymen do not confide in you very much, Senior Doctor. They do not love you, eh? Why is that, I wonder? The doctor, lifting his head, answered by a long, lifeless stare and the words, Perhaps because I have lived too long in Costaguana. Satillo had a gleam of white teeth under the black mustache. Aha! But you love yourself, he said, encouragingly. If you leave them alone, the doctor said, looking with the same lifeless stare at Satillo's handsome face, they will betray themselves very soon. Meantime, I may try to make Don Carlos speak? Ah, Senior Doctor, said Satillo, wagging his head, you are a man of quick intelligence. We were made to understand each other. He turned away. He could bear no longer that expressionless and motionless stare, which seemed to have a sort of impenetrable emptiness like the black depth of an abyss. Even in a man utterly devoid of moral sense there remains an appreciation of rascality which, being conventional, is perfectly clear. Satillo thought that Dr. Monaghan, so different from all Europeans, was ready to sell his countryman and Charles Gould, his employer, for some share of the San Tome silver. Satillo did not despise him for that. The colonel's want of moral sense was of a profound and innocent character. It bordered upon stupidity, moral stupidity. Nothing that served his ends could appear to him really reprehensible. Nevertheless, he despised Dr. Monaghan. He had for him an immense and satisfactory contempt. He despised him with all his heart, because he did not mean to let the doctor have any reward at all. He despised him, not as a man without faith and honor, but as a fool. Dr. Monaghan's insight into his character had deceived Satillo completely. Therefore he thought the doctor a fool. Since his arrival in Sulaco, the colonel's ideas had undergone some modification. He no longer wished for a political career in Montero's administration. He had always doubted the safety of that course. Since he had learned from the chief engineer that at daylight most likely he would be confronted by Pedro Montero, his misgivings on that point had considerably increased. The guerrillero brother of the general, the Pedrito of popular speech, had a reputation of his own. He wasn't safe to deal with. Satillo had vaguely planned seizing not only the treasure, but the town itself, and then negotiating at leisure. But in the face of facts learned from the chief engineer, who had frankly disclosed to him the whole situation, his audacity, never of a very dashing kind, had been replaced by a most cautious hesitation. An army crossed the mountains under Pedrito already. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.